This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Welcome to Speak for Yourself, presented by Hyundai. Marcellus Wiley here, not feeling my best. I know.
Why not, bro? Color on you, Marcellus.
You like color on me?
I like color on you.
Well, I was born with color. Hey, we got my man Emmanuel Otto in the building. Let's start with what's been an emotional week in sports. NBA players went on strike and missed 2 days of playoff games, which raises the question if something similar could happen in the NFL. Saquon Barkley said the thought of sitting out a game is, quote, something that we're going to talk about. NFL reporter Jim Trotter and friend of Emmanuel Acho tweeted today that a few prominent black players are telling him they want to sit out a game to force change and action. So, Acho, is this the right approach for NFL players like we are?
My guy, it is not. It is not, Marcellus. But remember what I said yesterday, and for those who missed it, I said that there's a saying in football, if you're all wrong, you're all right.
Yeah.
Long as you're all on the same page. Again, when I was playing the linebacker position, my defensive coordinator, he would relay the call into me. He would say, look, Acho, even if you make the wrong call, just make sure everybody makes it together in uniformity. You don't want a couple players, Marcellus, going rogue, so to speak.
Okay.
You don't want a couple players saying, you know what? Let me just make an executive decision to go on strike or to boycott, whatever you want to say, to sit out a game, because it won't have the mass impact. Marcellus, think about this. What is the most famous, so to speak, boycott amongst black people in American history? I would say the bus boycott.
Yeah, bus boycott.
Montgomery bus boycott, Rosa Parks, right?
Yeah, got to.
1955, Rosa Parks refuses to give up her seat to a white man. That's December 1st. By December 5th, the Montgomery Improvement Association had formed. It was black people came together and said, you know what? We are not going to ride buses. We are going to come together and do that. But here's the thing, Marcellus. Mm. It wasn't like Rosa Parks said, okay, I'm not going to ride the bus. But MLK said, I still got to get somewhere, so I'm going to have to ride this bus. No, they collectively said, we're not going to do this together, to the point where with a city, it raised the tax, it raised the minimum fare on taxis, Marcellus, so that black people now were forced to ride the buses. You know what they said? We are going to have a private taxi system. We're going to have drop-off points and pickup points. Okay. So we're all going to be in this together. Well, within a year, Supreme Court ruled that it was against the 14th Amendment, and now it desegregated the bus systems because they were in it together. I don't like, Marcellus, athletes going rogue and saying, I'm just going to boycott myself, because what does that accomplish if you don't do it in uniformity?
Huh. I don't like it for several reasons. One, I don't like it because I don't know what the end result's going to be. I don't know directly what your intent is, being real. I think it feels like a little contagion that has come from the NBA as it spread through other sports leagues, and now it's going to impact the NFL. Look, I think a lot of people are out there protesting for just reasons, but I've always lived my life to be the reason why you're protesting, which is for the equality that you're fighting for. I'm going to fight in my own life, in my own vicinity, looking in that mirror for that same equality. And what do I mean by that? Like, everyone keeps talking about circumstances. Everyone keeps talking about what's happening in this world. And not enough what's happening in their world, and from their expertise, their experience. I thought it was highly interesting that Jim Trotter quoted the players saying that they're tired, frustrated, and emotional. Here we go again.
You don't like that word. Marcellus don't like that word, emotional.
I love that word, but it has its place. And you call certain plays when you're emotional. Mm-hmm. And there are other plays you better not call when you're emotional because you're not thinking it through. So now I look at the NBA, and it's so interesting that we saw an NBA where 99% of the NBA players were wearing Black Lives Matter t-shirt. Not all, but 99%. 90% of the players had messaging on their jerseys. Not all, and a fewer amount, but many. But only 20% of them voted. Only 20% of them are registered to vote. Doc Rivers called them out. It's amazing that these guys, and I'm not calling them frauds. I'm just saying that there's such an optical game to be won right now where it's not being supported by real measured
That's good.
Actions.
That's good.
So I'm using the NBA for what it did. It wanted awareness. Your awareness is not one-sided. It's also, what are you doing? Now they're talking about creating a social justice coalition. But you already had Black Lives Matter on the court, T-shirts made, and equality and different messaging approved by the league on your jerseys. Reminds me of something that I see happening all the time, which is people just doing it for the gram, just doing it for the show. When Doc Rivers sat up there and said, only 20% of y'all registered to vote, but all y'all want to sit here and walk out? Make it make sense. So, Acho, I'm sitting here for anyone who's protesting and saying they're going to boycott, but in their real private life, the one greatest contribution we have to this political system to change our reality on a local, state, national level is that vote. Colin Kaepernick, 4 years ago, stood up, took a seat, and kneeled, all for this cause. He also didn't vote. It's just amazing to me that sometimes when you look at these guys from the outside, you say, yes, I would love to support you. But if you were to know them from the inside based on their actions, you don't know what to support.
Yeah, to your point, I love what you said about your experience with your expertise. That's something I think is gonna stick with me for a long time. I'm not going to knock a player for their personal convictions. You at home, not going to knock you for your personal convictions. If you have the conviction, Marcellus, to sit in or sit out of something based on your personal stance, you do that.
Yes.
So I'm not going to sit here and knock an individual player and say, look, if you have a strong conviction that says I cannot play this game and I don't want to participate in distracting from what's going on by giving you a game, okay, do that. Just understand that might not be accomplishing the greater good of what you're trying to accomplish. But to your point, athletes have to understand if they're going to walk this line, if they are going to try to lead the charge, lead the change, you have to make sure you cross all your T's and you dot all your I's, particularly as it pertains to the injustices. You can't sit here and simply wear, this is what, I don't want to go there.
Yes, you do.
Speak for yourself. Really perplexed me, frustrated me, and irked me over the last 2.5-3 months is Marcellus, so many of the marches and so many of the rallies, I saw so many pictures on the gram, people marching in this, people marching in that, people decorating their signs. And I'm like, y'all taking all these pictures? Who's snapping the pictures? And why? And it's no disrespect because, you know, in 2020, and I'm a millennial, you know what they say, if you don't have a picture, it didn't happen. I get all that. But when I'm thinking about the people that so many people have professed they want to emulate, the MLKs of the world, the Malcolm X's of the world, whoever it is that you wanted to emulate, I don't know that they were asking for selfies. I don't know that they were crossing the bridges and the interstates like, hey, make sure you get this can, didn't I? I don't think that's what it was. Now, I'm not going to knock it because, again, we do live in a social media age. But I'm just going to challenge. Make sure that it's not just talk. Make sure it's not just for show. Because there is a lot of that, right? But you said something yesterday. You don't do it for likes and follows. You do it for love and leaders. Something about that.
Yep.
Something stuck with me.
Yep.
Just make sure that we do live in an age where you have to do some stuff for the world to see, but make sure that your actions in private are also backing up your message in public.
Yeah, this social media, man, it creates an opportunity and platform for all. And for superstar athletes, these professional athletes, it allows their message to go across the world like that. And it brings complete awareness. But with that awareness comes a responsibility. Mm-hmm. I'm not mad that y'all out here talking it. But like I said, the Migos didn't make the right song. It should have been talk it like you're walking. Let's bring in LeVar Arrington on this. LeVar, would sitting out a game and protest be the right approach for NFL players?
Listen, I do not think it's the right approach. And I hate to say it because I understand what it represents and what these guys are ultimately trying to get across is the frustration and the disappointment and the pain and the fear that is surrounding mm-hmm. an entire country, not just a community, but a country. I tend to echo what your sentiments are in terms of what is the ultimate end? What is the ultimate goal? I started thinking about it from more of the perspective of if you're trying to be a leader in terms of using your influence and using your popularity and the platforms that assist you on those things in social media. I can understand you doing a campaign where you put the photos up and you put the videos up. I actually do understand it because, again, if you're trying to mass distribute a message, then you know what? Maybe social media has become the proper way to try to get that message out to the masses. But then it leads me to the second part of this, and you touched on it, Marcellus. What is the plan? What concerned me was it's like, oh, we're having conversations about it, which says to me that you don't have a plan. You guys are basically sitting around and saying, should we play or should we not play? How should we handle it? You know, what's the right way? So they may not even collectively have the right response to this question. And that concerns me. Why? Because this is such a big moment. It's such a big topic that to go into it half cocked and half ready to go, half baked, not well thought out. Mm. You don't have a plan where you have touch points of methodically moving through what it is that the check mark, you know, the punch list points are. I think it's dangerous. And the reason why it's dangerous is because you have people who understand what planning is. They understand what the ultimate goal is. If for what it's worth, that's why we're sitting in the situation currently that we're in now, is because people came together and said, you know what? I'm tired of this king, the crown, telling me what to do, and I need to figure out how I can live the type of life I want to live. You know what? Let's build a boat. Let's find a boat. Let's go get on this boat. Let's get up out of here. Let's go find a place where we can exercise what we want to exercise. And that's what happened. That's what happened. You know, when you celebrate Independence Day, you're celebrating a British deal. Like, they left Britain. Like, you're celebrating your independence from the crown. We weren't there. I don't know about you, Acho or Marcellus, but we weren't in Britain. So to me, when you're thinking about how much has to go into gaining that equality, it's not sitting out a game. It is a total deal. Get all of that social media movement and get all of the people of America to sit out for a week. Not just the athletes and influencers and famous people. How about everybody, the people that's going to sit there and finger point and thump at you and say you're not black enough or you're not real enough or you ain't about the cause, you sell out, you're sitting on the porch, you're inside the house. How about every last one of y'all put it on the line and let's all sit out an entire week? Not just a game. Let's all sit out an entire month. Not just a moment, right? But everybody is okay when it's convenient to be able to look at somebody else and say, oh, they're famous. It won't hurt them as much. You need to do for us what we can't do for ourselves, which in some cases makes sense. And this one, I don't buy it.
Man, let me personalize this story because what do they say? You can impress people with your accolades, but you can impact them with your scars. So I'm gonna tell y'all about some of my scars because I am the son of a mother who worried a lot and a dad who didn't trip at all. He gonna be all right. And a grandmother who prayed all the time. And I still had to deal with reality. And y'all know my story, I think, enough beyond Wikipedia. I'm from Compton, South Central, inner city, Los Angeles, and I'm here now. It's interesting when I talk about my road, how I was able to navigate by the help of others. Some of them helping me with direct communication that was actually a positive influence. And some of them, because of my direct communication and proximity to them and them doing bad things, I learned to define myself by them of what I didn't want to be and what to become growing up. So through this navigation, I was called a lot of names. And I still hear a lot of those names. I'm a sellout. I'm a coon. I'm a sucker. Marcellus, why are you on the academic decathlon team? Oh, why are you in the spelling bee? Why do you always think you smarty art? Why your book bag so full? And look, I am not blaming any of them for not thinking the same way I did, but I kept on my road and I knew I had an end goal, end game in sight. Even as a youngster, my first experience with violence, because this is an awareness issue. Everyone keeps talking about systemic issues and racial injustice. Let me tell you about some systemic issues in my neighborhood and give you full awareness. I was concussed before I even played football. I was 7 years old on a swing and some bloods walked up and they didn't want to see me. And 5 seconds later, I'm in my grandmother's house with a huge hole in my head, pushed off the swing, landed on a boulder. 9 stitches later, I moved forward. Was I stressed, post-traumatic stress? I didn't even feel that. I didn't even know what that meant. We fast forward, at least 6 different occasions in my life growing up, I had to run for my life because bullets were spraying all around me, including one incident when I was on a high school football field, warming up, doing jumping jacks, 80, 90 strong, our team. The whole entire field is littered with bullets. Police come, police handle that situation. Do you know we continue to play that game? Am I post-traumatic stress? I ain't think so. I look back at all these incidents, and I have more, but I'm not gonna keep you guys bogged down with just my details. But I look back at the data, and the data tells me in my high school years, I always called them NWA years, because when they came out, I was in high school, and life changed around my neighborhood. Let me just tell you, and I think the entire country. There were 6,417 homicides committed against people of color. I had to navigate. I had to be blessed. I had grace and mercy, but I also had an end game in sight that made my choices have to line up to what my goals were. And yeah, it's not going to be a perfect experience no matter how much you worry, how much you don't care about it, and how much you pray about it. You still got to deal with it. I just want everyone to know right now, if you have something that is weighing heavily on your heart, make sure before you start the movement towards that goal that you even know what that goal is and have it in sight. Coming up at the top of the hour, NBA players have found an unlikely ally on social justice issues in Michael Jordan. We'll tell you if he's the right guy for the job. But first, Brian Urlacher sets social media on fire by calling out NBA players for protesting. We'll tell you what we think next. Speak for Yourself is presented by Hyundai.
Welcome back to Speak for Yourself, presented by Hyundai. As usual, social media has been riddled with good, bad, and of course, ugly responses to the NBA protest that took place this week. Bears Hall of Fame linebacker Brian Urlacher waded into the discussion with a post of his own, and it did not sit well with many. This comes directly from his Instagram account. Quote, Brett Favre played the Monday night football game the day his dad died, threw for 4 touchdowns in the first half, and was a legend for playing in the face of adversity. NBA players boycott the playoffs because a dude reaching for a knife wanted on a felony sexual assault warrant was shot by police? Oh, ignorant. Joined by LeVar Arrington.
I know where you're going.
I'm going to start with you. Yes. What's your reaction to Urlacher's post, my friend?
Man, this thing right here. Well, this one was perplexing to me. Because if you see how this all is layered, it's an interesting one. Urlacher. One, you suggested a terrible opinion and sent it at the worst moment, even though everything he said was actually factually correct, which makes you say, whoa, what is this? What kind of stew is he right now brewing up? Because he went, and I've seen this before, working in media, working with individuals, that they stand on proper ground to suggest something that is really a thumb in the eye, and then they throw the rocks, hide their hands, because this is not even his original post. This is like retweets and reposting. And then sit there and say, y'all deal with the agitation. It's an amazing thing because Brian Urlacher has to know this. He's media savvy enough. I know Brian a little bit. We certainly played against each other and talked to him many a times. You got to know that in this world, we talk about the act, not the actor. So if you talk about Brett Favre, you're talking about the act of the bravery or the courage of him to respond in that moment. But when you talked about Jacob Blake, you talked about the actor, and you started to undress him and his issues and indiscretion. So that's why it didn't sit well with me, and I'm sure many, many others out there.
You know, what I found to be interesting, the first thing I thought was the 17-year-old kid that is allowed to just walk away with his AR rifle in his arm and after the fact is then apprehended and incarcerated. Where was the tweet, Brian? Where was the IG post, Brian? What is your idea? What is your thought process on what his actions were? And if that was justifiable in any way, shape, or form. So I just kind of came to the conclusion that I'm not going to be out here defending dudes. This Urlacher is my draft class. I know Urlacher. I don't know him super well, but we came up together. And I just came to the conclusion, like, I'm not going to go on national television trying to defend this dude. That was the first conclusion. That was my first reaction when I saw,
not that.
You know, what happened. Then I gave you my second reaction on, well, if you can justify shooting a man in his back, which how many cops were there? How many police officers were present? Like four, at least, I think, were there. And some had their guns drawn. If you're sitting there and you really want to put out there the information of saying that this person was going for a knife in a gunfight with his back turned, I just think it comes across as a very disingenuous way to try to make a point. But understanding this, and this is a very critical thing to a piece of information to understand, that's his truth. That is his perspective, and he put it out there. So my dad always told me, when somebody tells you and shows you who they are,
believe them.
Believe them. Believe who they are and move from there. So I don't ever want to be in no situation, God forbid, if I find myself at an event for the NFL or something and me and B-Lac are there, I don't not want to be as, you know, cool with them if we're out. But I for dang sure ain't trying to take the Uber with you or ride, I'm not rolling with you because now it's filed away that, so for all them years, you were the captain, you were B-Lac, you're the middle linebacker, the new monsters of the midway, and your supporting cast pretty much was all the dude that turned his back around and was going for a knife and got shot in the back seven times. They're the reason why you're in the National Football Hall of Fame. But yet you feel this way on the inside, I'm cool on you. We good. You're allowed to feel what you want to feel, but that's now filed away in my mental Rolodex. Like, you know, we ain't on no hug up, dap up type of situation at this point.
Yeah, my first thoughts on my first lap are this. See, this is actually why I appreciate awareness of social injustice, why I appreciate protests. I know, Marcellus, you said something in response to Bruce Arians yesterday, and B.A. was saying he doesn't necessarily think protests accomplish much. Actively, they may not, but passively, they actually do a lot. You know, when you live in an area that may not be, regardless of where you live, if it's nighttime, you turn on a light, it's going to expose some roaches. See, all of a sudden, you turn on them lights and them roaches going to start scrambling around. Why? Because when it was dark, you couldn't see because they weren't exposed. But under the light, some things got exposed. What am I saying? What I'm saying is when issues like this, when injustice is brought to the forefront and people have to express their real opinions, it exposes things. And I'm not here to cancel. That's not what I believe in. But you can't fix a problem that you don't know exists. So to LeVar's point, if Brian Urlacher genuinely feels like this, he doesn't yet understand the true nature of what's going on. This has nothing to do with Brett Favre playing a game after his father died versus whatever Urlacher's talking about. What I've realized is people still need to be exposed to the real issues so that now that you understand the real issues, you can fix it. So if protests, if taking a knee, if wearing Black Lives Matter shirts, if it does nothing else, Marcellus, it gets people talking. And now that people are talking, we get to hear people's opinions. And like LeVar said, we can either help educate them based on what might be an ignorant opinion, or we can file them away in the cabinet we need to file them away in and proceed with our lives.
Interesting. Let's go biblical. Sonny Sun is up here. My man Acho right here. And to your point, roaches in the daylight are the worst. You're like, what the hell is a roach doing in the daylight? I remember one time I was having breakfast and one ran across the cereal. I was like, yo, not in the daytime.
You got to pour the whole bowl away.
Oh, man. In the morning? Like, y'all violating. Okay, here's the thing. As you are a bishop's son, you understand, ye judge, ye shall be judged. Mm-hmm. Urlacher gave us this lens that now is going to be critical in terms of looking at him through a different exposure. We're going to be looking at him a little differently because of the lens he looked at this situation through. And how did he look at this situation? Let's just break it down simply. Because this is not a gotcha moment. Like, oh, we got you, Urlacher. Light's on you as much. Because Urlacher ain't tripping. Urlacher revealed who he was, and he did it comfortably. He did it on his Instagram. He did it
comfortably.
He has followers, y'all. So don't act like y'all ran and kicked down the door and found out Urlacher was in there. Urlacher's like, hey, I'm in here. What's up? Who's out there? There's a false equivalence that he tried to draw, and I caught it. When he's talking about Brett Favre, he basically sums it up by making us have the impression of strength. Strength. Courage. Strength. Like, oh, that's a strong man right there. But then when he goes to the second tweet talking about Jacob Blake, he's basically telling y'all players, y'all weak. Because y'all going out there and boycotting and hurt by a criminal. And if you notice that difference, that's the exposure. That's the lens in which now, once you catch that he deviated from his initial point, or at least in his repost, that now ye judge, ye shall be judged. So now you go and go look at Brian Urlacher going forward, as LeVar said, in a more critical eye. Me, personally, I ain't fazed by what he posted because I know who I am. And now, thankfully, I know who Brian Urlacher is.
That's a fact.
So when I
Indeed.
See you, I got that for you. I don't live in this world that's binary and once you do that, you off. Because that's cancel culture in your own world.
Sure.
I'm not
going
to have cancel culture for this dude. I just know that Urlacher going to go to certain lengths and go to certain directions that maybe Marcellus Wiley won't go.
I said on the show yesterday, if the blade cools off, all you can do is try to continue to sharpen it. That is the only thing that you can do to steal once it cools down from being molded from that heat. This is a simple situation where he's a blade. He's not being wielded right now. He is a finished product blade. So for me, the most disturbing part of this, the reason why I don't look at it as cancel culture, how I feel about it. What I look at is it bothered me because I believe he's a husband and a father. I do, if my memory serves me correctly.
I think he got divorced, but yeah.
Look at me. Hey.
I know his baby. You got a baby.
But what bothers me is that man, whether a criminal, you funny, Marcellus, that man, whether a criminal or not, in that moment was in the presence of babies, of young people and a mother. And for you to have no type of awareness of what, maybe you have a point about Blake himself, but do you think that it is okay to actually repost something that would suggest that because this man has a charge, which hasn't been convicted of, if that's the case, it's conflicting reports on if it's true or not. If there was a knife in the car and that was confirmed, that it is still okay for you to handle a situation in such a way where you talked about post-traumatic syndrome. What do you think them babies are thinking right now today, Brian? What do you think that mom is thinking today, Brian? How do you feel about those babies who are totally innocent in the situation, Brian, as to what they're going through based off of your logic of what it is that you reposted and said, hey, NBA guys, Brett Favre threw 4 touchdown passes when his dad died. So what's up with you guys? I think it's disconnected. Mm. What bothers me is that these babies are involved in this and this continues to perpetuate itself and repeat itself because we're paying attention to the guy. We're not even paying attention to who it really, truly impacts the most, which is these babies that are trying to figure out how do I fit in this society? How am I supposed to internalize this when I should be playing in a sandbox with toys and you're sitting here and I got to watch my father be shot in his back by somebody that I'm being trained should be taking care of me while he's trying to take the life of my dad. Like, come on, Urlacher. Be better than that. Be who you are. I have no problem with you being who you are, but be better than that. Because if that was you, you would not want your child to see something like that. And please don't give me, well, it wouldn't be me in that situation. Okay, I get that. There have been enough innocent people that have been shot in their backs as well, where you can't qualify that as a reason to say that it wouldn't be you.
Wow. That's some heat. Well, it's clear that Brian Urlacher is uneducated as to why exactly these NBA players are protesting and what is going on. So allow me to further educate. Brian Urlacher and anyone else who's still unaware, it's not just about Jacob Blake who was shot. It's not about George Floyd or Breonna Taylor. It's not just about Ahmaud Arbery. You see, black people are still crying tears over Emmett Till. 65 years ago today, August 28th, 1955, Emmett Till was a 14-year-old boy who ventured from Chicago, the same Chicago where you, Brian Urlacher, became a Hall of Famer, to Mississippi to visit some relatives. A white woman, Carolyn Bryant, accused Emmett Till of flirting with her. Well, he was murdered, mutilated and murdered. In 1955, the two men who murdered him were acquitted. In 1956, they admitted that they did it. Carolyn Bryant, the woman who accused Emmett Till of flirting with her, in 2017, she recanted that story. Emmett Till, he would be 79 years old today. So, Brian Urlacher, understand the tears, the pain, the frustration of black people. It's not just about seven shots. It's about a long, long history. Coming up, Daniel Jones has a huge sophomore season in front of him, and his new head coach is finding creative ways to toughen him up. We'll tell you if this is a good idea next. Speak for Yourself, presented by Hyundai.
Oh, welcome back to Speak for Yourself, presented by Hyundai, where things are getting weirder by the day in Giants camp. Head coach Joe Judge already made headlines by making players and assistant coaches run laps for mistakes. Take a lap! Then he made heads turn when he said he was considering taking the red non-contact jersey off Daniel Jones. Well, Judge reacted to all this criticism with some humor. Take a listen.
Yeah, I got the strength staff downstairs when I'm putting bars of soap in socks, and we're just going to take them out back and just wail on them for a while. No, look, it's our responsibility to get every player, you know, ready to play. And, you know, with a quarterback, you've got to be smart about the contact.
LeVar's still with us, but Acho, you're up first. Do you like how your boy, Joe Judge, is responding to criticism?
I hate that and I hate this. What do I mean?
What?
Marcellus. What? See, Joe Judge is now making me anti-New York Giants. Like, I have no beef with the Giants as of last year. I like the Giants. I like Saquon. Daniel Jones, nobody believed in him, and he balled a little bit early on last year. But now, Joe Judge, you coming in here with this ignorance, and I got to call it out. Giants fans, I've upped your win total yesterday from 2 wins to 5 wins. Y'all are mad at me, but Marcellus, again, the full screen Prince got a full screen.
What you got going?
Giants fans, it's all fun and games till y'all start losing games. I said y'all going to win 5 games, and this is how I look at it. First week, y'all going to lose. Second week to the Bears, you're going to win. Then you're going to lose to the Niners, lose to the Rams, lose to the Cowboys. By then, Joe Judge is going to be done with the jokes. Y'all going to beat the Redskins, lose to the Eagles, lose to the Bucks, beat the Redskins again, lose to the Eagles, beat the Bengals, lose to the Seahawks, beat the Cardinals, and that's going to be your last win. And Joe Judge, he's not going to be smiling then, Marcellus. So I got a problem with Joe Judge because these Giants fans, they deserve more than a head coach who's going to come in here, try to cover up his ignorance with some jokes that's not even funny. Joe Judge, this ain't the Patriots no more. You can't just call kickoff wedge left, wedge right. You can't run field goal team can't sit here and run your punt return and punt hold up teams out there. That's not what this is. You have to orchestrate an entire organization. What? And again, we're going to see if you laughing come week 7 when y'all about 2-5.
Wow, it was a joke. Laugh. Either laugh or walk out the comedy club. Don't stand up and protest. How dare you, Joe Judge? You're making this unlikable, this whole genre of comedy. Oh, you as a coach. I like this one. I was off Joe Judge a little bit with you. I'm back on Joe Judge. I like me some Joe Judge, and I'm going to tell you why. Before this moment, before he showed levity, before he could make something lighthearted and be self-aware enough to know the criticism about him, and to make a joke about it, I thought that he was a dictator. But now I realize, oh, you're just a disciplinarian. You actually got a scowl and that ugly, mean face. And you're really smiling on the inside. And I give you an example. I played for a coach like just Joe Judge, a tremendous coach, Hall of Fame coach, Bill Parcells. And this is Parzellian to me right now. Big Tuna was his nickname, his persona.
He would let that lead the charge, lead how he led the team at times. But every now and then you get a glimpse of the man with the big heart, the smile, Bill Parcells. I remember this one incident. I had a perfect spot in the locker room because I still was big dog, even though I was coming down the hill. And I was right there at the edge. And Bill Parcells, the way the Dallas Cowboys locker room was, he came in exactly in front of me on the exact opposite side of the locker room. He walks in. It's 30, 40 dudes in there chilling. We were clowning, talking, joking, everything. He walks in, first step, crickets. And he walks slowly. Didn't say a word. Just walked in that locker room, crickets. Walked out that locker room, took a right turn. My boy Leo Carson turned with him, and that was his boy. And then I peeked because I had the perfect locker room spot, and I saw Bill Parcells start laughing. He's like, I love when I could do that to them. That's the point. Joe Judge is out there saying, look, I'm a lead. I'm going to change this culture. I'm going to be a disciplinarian. But y'all know I am not a robot. So for all those critics out there, naysayers,
I'm one.
Achos of the world, relax until we see this team go out there and play, because this new culture may actually produce results.
You know, when I was in high school, I would do interviews, and because I was not used to doing interviews, I said, and you know, quite a bit.
You still do that?
My mother, no, I don't. My mother used to put me in the mirror. In her master bed, or excuse me, her main bedroom,
okay,
and sit on the commode seat and make me answer the questions in the mirror. Mm. If I answered it correctly, she would tell me that is great, da da da, this, that, so on and so forth. I ended up becoming pretty good at doing interviews. All right. One thing that my mother told me, and it always stuck with me, and it was very wise. It didn't really resonate, but now today it kind of makes a whole lot more sense. Jokes aren't jokes unless you have credibility to go along with them.
Oh.
And I started thinking to myself, I don't want to look like a gesture or a clown when I'm joking, because nobody knows what my capabilities are. If I have won a Super Bowl and I said something like this, I know the reference. My father was in the military, a wounded warrior. So I know the Gomer Powell getting his tail kicked in the barracks. In Full Metal Jacket. I know the reference that he made. So a lot of people, it might have even went over their head, you know, putting soap in socks and beating him up while he's in the bed, because they were making him a tough soldier. Well, I'll say this to Acho's point. It didn't end well for Gomer Powell, and it didn't end well for the drill sergeant that took him through basic training. He did become a great soldier. But he was too great, and he lost his mind in the midst of becoming that. I think right now, looking at Joe Judge, he really believes he's doing the right things, but he has to be careful. I don't know what the relationship is behind closed doors. I can hear the sound bites and react from that. But if he isn't making sure that he has a good, strong, healthy relationship with his team to be able to say things in a jokingly manner or do the things that he's doing, making them run laps or, you know, hitting the quarterback, if he's not on the same page as these guys, it can go bad really quickly. And at the pro level, that is death to a coach's career as the head guy. So he's got to be very aware and cognizant of the fact that joking around without having any type of credibility to you, your players might end up laughing at you and losing respect for you and not want to follow you to where it is that you ultimately are trying to get them to.
Let me tell a story myself, and then let me leave a parting message, if I may.
Oh, message.
Judge, everybody, those who are message. Believing in him, they believe in him because of the way that John Harbaugh, current head coach for the Baltimore Ravens, paved. John Harbaugh, remember, former special teams coach for 10 years, Philadelphia Eagles, before becoming a phenomenal head coach. Joe Judge, special teams coach for 10 years before now getting a head coaching position. Well, when John Harbaugh was under the tutelage of Andy Reid, head coach for the Chiefs, John Harbaugh would consistently walk into Andy Reid's office back when they were both on the Philadelphia Eagles staff. And gentlemen, he would walk into Andy Reid's office and he would see a 3x5 note card sitting on Andy Reid's desk behind Andy Reid each and every day. And he'd walk into his office and he'd see the note card and he'd see the note card and he'd see the note card. You want to know what the note card said, gentlemen?
What did it say?
It said, "Don't judge." And that's all I can say. Giants, do not judge. Don't Joe Judge. Don't no kind of participation in this nonsense of Joe Judge.
But man. That's his name. That's his name.
Woo, y'all are, man.
Joe Judge came in and all the stories were dark, dark, dark. And finally, he shines a little light, and now we're going to tackle
and
more.
Still at least piling on.
Y'all are. I'm not. It makes him more likable to me. And let me just clean up what LeVar was saying, because it's interesting. He was talking about you got to have credibility to be funny, to have a joke, right? I disagree with that. Be very careful in these situations, because I've been the best player before, and I've also been a bum on the same damn team. And let me tell you what happens. When they're laughing, they ain't laughing at your joke when you're the man. They laughing because you said that joke. Because I've been the right. same guy that was even funnier when I was sorry on the team, and all of a sudden ain't nobody laughing at my butt. So personality, it doesn't make plays. I had the nicest coach ever, probably ever walked this planet, in Mike Riley. Anybody ever met Mike Riley? No, he's the nicest guy ever. We were sorry. It doesn't matter. You could be mean. You could be sorry. You could be happy. You could be great. I'm just saying, let's not map everything on to right now his personality in terms of what the production is going to look like going forward. Coming up, speaking of personality, Cam Newton is embracing Bill Belichick, and it's starting to sound like Tom Brady. We'll explain next. Speak for yourself. Presented by Hyundai.
Back to Speak for Yourself. Time now for a rewarding performance sponsored by Capital One. What's in your wallet? Cam Newton has been rewarding the Patriots with a new attitude at camp. Bill Belichick even praised his new quarterback's work ethic and personality, but he still hasn't named him the starter. Cam is taking the most reps at practice, but he doesn't see himself as QB1. Let's take a listen.
Every day is a work day for me, and that label is not important to me right now, because I know I have so much that I need to get better at, so much that I need to learn, so much that I need to be comfortable with. And throughout this process, that's the last thing that I'm pretty much worried about.
LeVar, glad to have you back with us. But Marcellus, I'm going with you first. You like Cam's attitude and his hat, but you like his attitude towards being a starter?
I love his attitude. I love that hat even more. What the hell was that? That is so funny. What Tom Sawyer, Huckleberry?
Honestly, let's take
I love hat Marcellus. Swag.
That is swag. Like his attitude. Is how you feel about the hat?
That hat
I
is.
I love the hat.
I can't pull it off. So, one, I'm amazed at that. And two, if you ever seen Cam Newton in person, then he going to have that on. Top of it too. Ooh, that boy killing the game. But let me get back on topic right now. I love Cam because he just showed me his finesse game is strong, stronger than mine. I'm actually jealous of him because I'm the type of guy to just bum rush the situation and just show you how thirsty I am for that opportunity. Whereas Cam is like, I'm sorry, Julian Edelman and your Batman Superman post. And I'm sorry, media that is now seeing that I'm taking the majority of the reps, that I look like the starter. Until Belichick says I'm the starter, I'm not even thinking about it. I'm not even thirsting for that. So no cart before the horse with Cam. And I have to respect that, because Cam has been, we just talked about it last block, the highest of highs, and being real, the lowest of lows. And why were they low? Because Cam knew that his body failed him. He walks into training rooms where he's not the priority anymore. And Cal Allen is balling to a point at a time where Cam Newton became, you know, afterthought. Can you believe that? So Cam Newton knows how the business of the NFL works, and way to show finesse and way to show fashion as well, Cam.
Cam, I love your fashion, but I don't like your mindset. Look, Marcellus, LeVar, I need my quarterbacks to be the cockiest person on the... I need them to be the most confident person on the field. Remember, what was it? Seahawks playing the Packers. Matt Hasselbeck takes the field in overtime. They win the coin toss. We want the ball, and we're going to score. Sure. Now, I get it. He threw a pick six, and they didn't win the game.
I'm about to
but
say.
At least he thought he was going to. You see, hell what no. I need, Marcellus,
no thoughts.
I need Cam to at least think he's going to be the starter so he can continue to prepare and play like it. Hear my thing, Marcellus. Hear my thing. I'm a psychology dude. You know this.
Yeah.
By the time Cam takes a field week one, gentlemen, he wouldn't have won a game in 22 months. Cam got a little self-doubt. I don't need those words to emphasize that self-doubt. 2 years since you won a game? That's a long time. So I like the style, Cam, but I need that mindset to be cocky.
That's an MVP, man. Will you stop? Get him, LeVar.
I'm giving you I'm sorry, Marcellus. I'm going to give y'all a translation here. I can translate it because I've experienced. Let me start by saying this. My freshman year of college, I went to school there. They promised me that I have an opportunity to start, and I committed early to go there. I get there, and they had a jersey color coordinated deal. And orange was like you were a scrub, like you were practice squad. You weren't, you didn't have a chance to start. But blue, dark blue was a starter. White was a starter for offense. One day I go to my locker, my cubby has a blue jersey. I go out to practice, and all the seniors and upperclassmen are looking at me like, look at this dude. Like, what? Why did they give him a blue jersey? So I do a post-practice interview, and I say, you know what? The starting job, that title really doesn't mean much to me. I'm just trying to contribute and be the best football player that I can possibly be, best teammate that I can be. Sounded much like what Cam Newton said. The translation here is I know that I have a chance to start, but I don't think I'm the starter. I'm not going to jump out there and say I'm a starter when I'm not clear and sure if I'm a starter. So to me, I sat there and said what I felt was the right and appropriate thing to say, and I think that that's what Cam Newton said here. I think his attitude is fine because I think he's still trying to get a stable ground on if he is the starter or not. And until he's named the starter and knows he's the starter, he has to walk around the topic of conversation in this manner. So I like the approach.
Look, y'all know better than I, because y'all were perennial starters, all pros, pro bowlers, Hall of Famers in your head while y'all was in the NFL. I was just clawing to stay on the depth chart. So if your boy's in training camp, the only thing I care about is where do I fall on the depth chart. Now, Cam, right, he's a different person athletically than I ever was. Y'all are on the same page in that regard. But what I know is this.
What?
Cam, if this is a Patriot way, you don't need to do all that, Cam, because I don't like Clark Kent Cam Newton. Ooh. I like Super Cam, and that's what I'm trying to see. Ooh. Coming up, our big
story.
He did
have his hat on.
Michael Jordan avoided politics in his playing days, but now as an owner, he's embracing a new role. We'll tell you if he's the right guy for the job. That's next. Speak for yourself.
You're watching Speak for Yourself, sponsored by KFC's $20 fill-up. Drive-thrus open or get delivery by Grubhub. Marcellus Wiley here. Manuel Ochoa, it's time for our big story. So let's head to the NBA, where the players have found an ally in Michael Jordan after days of tense meetings that could have ended the season. Jordan, who is the only black majority owner in the league, reached out to Chris Paul to offer assistance and spoke with Russell Westbrook about social justice issues. Jordan reportedly then told a group of owners, quote, "Right now, listening is better than talking." So Ochoa, is Michael Jordan the right guy for this job?
He absolutely is, Marcellus, and he is because I'm reminded of a song in Hamilton. Phenomenal musical.
It was great. It was.
Phenomenal.
Usually they don't live up to the hype.
But that one did.
And it cost.
And it's a song, The Room Where It Happens.
Okay.
Right? And it's about Alexander Hamilton, Burr, Thomas Jefferson, all them cats. They was in the room where it happened.
Oh, people.
What am I saying? I'm saying that when decisions are being made, you got to be in the room where it happens, right? A lot of these players, they're not entering these rooms where these decisions are being made. Why? Because let's be real. Some of these owners, these more wealthier individuals, they don't, one, respect you because you don't have that level of wealth that merits that level of respect to enter some of these rooms. I'm going to just keep it a buck with you. And two, y'all are just very, very different. Michael Jordan, one, based on what he accomplished on the court, but also more importantly, based on what he's accomplished in the pockets, okay? He's earned the respect of the decision makers. There needs to be a mediator. There needs to be an intermediary. There needs to be someone who can stand in the gap between some of these players, 23, 24, 25, and these owners, 50, 60, 70, extremely wealthy. There needs to be somebody to bridge that gap. Who better than one of, if not the most notable sports figure, the most notable unequivocally basketball player in Michael Jordan. So he is the right guy for the job because he can enter into these rooms, Marcellus. He can infiltrate these spaces that these players just quite literally can't.
Yeah, and I agree. He's the right guy for the job. He's a double owner on top of just being an owner. Not only the owner, a majority owner of a basketball team, but Jordan Brand. And the two guys he talked to are Jordan Brand clients. So think about it. Being a double owner, having that credibility, being a former player, just think about all the different inputs and outputs that exist in what Michael Jordan displays. So that's going to obviously give everyone a sense of comfort. More than that, I think that his business attributes a lot of times get mischaracterized in terms of him not wanting to step in it and alienate people when he was a player and polarize others when he was a player. He took a lot of slack for just being focused on basketball and growing his brand, which is, to me, the greatest personal brand we've ever seen. So when you think about Michael Jordan, I don't think you really have the full picture in terms of his greatness even then off the court. Think about what that has monetized and materialized into. He's an owner. Mm-hmm. But more importantly, Michael Jordan had a mindset that he knew what he was good at, he knew what he was great at, and he knew what he wasn't good at. He knew what he didn't know. So like a LeBron James right now, one of the criticisms of LeBron is that he goes into places and spaces at times and he doesn't have the depth of knowledge in those situations. Jordan knew that when he was walking through the house, even though the door was unlocked, not to always open it because he had a singular focus. So it's interesting now that he's evolved. Mm-hmm. And through that evolution, he's made it more comfortable for the players to come to him and more importantly for ownership to respect him and bring him into their circle. Let's bring in right now our Fox NBA analyst, Rick Bucher. Welcome to our circle. So, Slick Rick, MJ has become a go-between for the owners and the players. Is he the right man for the job?
No, he's not. And when I was first presented with this question, I was right there with you guys. I looked at the appearances and said, well, of course, former owner, former player, the only owner who's a former player has the respect of both sides for certain. There are owners that became owners in part because they got the opportunity to hang with Michael Jordan. His legacy and his legend carry that far. But in this circumstance, first of all, the guy that would be the most ideal is no longer with us, and that's former Commissioner David Stern, the late David Stern, because he has the experience of having brought the league out of deep water and getting the owners and the players to work together in order to make that happen. And make no mistake, the NBA may be back and playing, but right now they are facing issues between the players and the owners that puts them in deep water. All that said, Acho, you were talking about all of Jordan's financial success, which the players look at and they respect. And to a certain degree, the owners do too, but he's not by any stretch the deepest pockets in that room. There are other guys that have been far more successful financially than Michael Jordan. On the other side of the equation, the players. Marcellus, you mentioned the Jordan brand. If I'm James Harden or I'm Damian Lillard or I'm a guy who's not associated with Nike or the Jordan brand, I begin to question, okay, what are the entanglements? He's talking to Russ and CP3. Mm. Like, does he have our best interest in heart? And that is ultimately the two elements that are most important for the go-between, which is the ability to say, not only do I understand and have your best interest at heart, owners and players, but that I have the wherewithal to get that done. And again, that's why I said David Stern, because he's demonstrated that he has that ability. Michael Jordan, based on his history, yes, I think it's been overblown, his lack of concern when it comes to social issues. Mm-hmm. But nonetheless, he has not been on the front line when it comes to that. And that is something that needs to be resolved with the players. And on the owner side of things, does he have the records? Are they going to look at him and say, you're a former owner? You might be going just a little too soft with them. It's walking that line, and I'm just not sure that Michael carries. There's plenty of respect. Does he have the ability to be that go-between? That is the question.
See, Slick, I agree with you. I disagree with you, rather, on a few accounts. I've agreed with you all week, so pardon the misspeak right there. you said that there were two necessary elements, and the first element you said for someone to be the go-between is that level of understanding. When I think about the element that's necessary to me, it's passion, it's fervor, it's a desire, a real want to for change. Michael Jordan, he's been through some things this year. Remember, after Kobe died, he said a piece of me died when Kobe died. I feel like, number one, that led to change. But most importantly, remember how Michael Jordan tragically lost his father by gunshot. And remember, Jacob Blake, 7 shots right now. I think that is an internal motivation that is now becoming external for Michael Jordan. When I'm looking for a leader, Slick, I need someone who is passionate about the cause, someone who truly has a vested interest to truly be that go-between. But then you said that Jordan's pockets aren't as deep as the owner's. You're exactly right. But you need a ticket to get into the door. And Slick, if you're buying a concert ticket, if you're buying a ticket to any venue, yeah, you can sit courtside, you can sit in the nosebleeds, but as long as you got a ticket, you can get in. Jordan at least has enough money to get a ticket to get into the door to converse with these owners. So when I do look at a go-between, I see that Michael Jordan is the perfect one. Number one, because he has a ticket to get inside. He might not be sitting courtside with these owners, but he has a ticket to get inside. But then number two, Jordan has the motivation. He understands what's going on. And while he may have been detached over the last several years, it appears that Jordan is coming back around, at least publicly, to say, you know what? Let me do what you players can't do. Because if I'm being real, owners will forever look at players as players. Owners' name are quite literally owners. And so Michael Jordan, he's not necessarily going to be looked at that. He's not going to be degraded to that. Michael Jordan is also an owner, majority owner of the Charlotte team. So therefore, I see Jordan being the perfect go-between.
Yeah, I got to disagree with you too, Slick. Rick, I think he's the perfect guy for a few reasons. Here comes the punches. Bow, bow. One thing is you mentioned that he lacks financial capital to be on the same playing field as the other owners. But what he lacks in financial capital, he laps them in human capital in terms of just being in that room, the presence, to be able to talk to these players on a different channel than the rest of the owners. And let's not go outside of those borders, because human capital can certainly translate into getting things done, especially when you bring up the name Michael Jordan. And one thing that I noticed about Michael Jordan in terms of just all the layers of his success, let's not forget that how laser focused he must have been and must be to always not just get the job done, but come out number one. You're one in a million, probably even greater odds, just to make it to the pros. And then you not only are one in a million, but you become the one. And everyone wants to tell you what else you should be focused on and should do and add to your bag. But Michael Jordan said, let me just do this first. And then he leaves the game of basketball. And for most professional athletes, even the greats, their highlights are behind them, not in front of them. But he translates that, because of his Nike connection and his brand, to Jordan brand. And then he starts to kill it at that while becoming an owner, the only owner that's a brother as a majority owner of an NBA team. So now you're starting to say, man, this dude is not only kicking down the door, but he's taking the king's throne every time he does something. You look at that situation and imagine you walk into the room and there are 29 majority owners that look everything but black. And then there's one in there. And then CP3 is sitting there, you know, as the president of the NBPA. He's like, Steve Ballmer, got an issue. Let's talk about this social justice. What do you think and what do you project that's going to happen going forward? And Steve Ballmer looks at CP3 and says, yeah, Michael, what do you think about it? And Michael has to answer that question. And then they go to Jeannie Buss and they say, hey, Jeannie, what are you planning to propose for a social justice issue? She's like, oh, I wish Magic was here. Hey, Michael, what do you project? The point of it is Michael Jordan has broad enough shoulders to take some of the pressure, the guilt, the issues that come from the complexion of all of the rest of that room, and to translate that in terms that no one else in that room can.
So what I'm disappointed is in with the two of you is that the first thing that should have been asked, okay, Slick, I'm now using that as well. Okay, Slick, so Michael Jordan isn't the right man for the job. Who? I didn't say he couldn't do the job. I just said he's not the right man for the job. So who, Slick, is the right man for the job?
He said David Stern. He's gone. Rest in peace.
And the right man for the job is Mark Cuban. Because if you'll note about what the players have asked for, while we have made a big deal about social justice, the gives that the owners have given to this point, have the majority of them have had to do with voting. And that, to me, is the tell. That what the players really want is that they want a change in the leadership in this country. And they want the help of the owners to make that happen. And they want to know that the owners are as committed to making that happen as they are. Mark Cuban, there is nobody, Michael Jordan included, who has crossed swords with the current president more than Mark Cuban. He has that cachet and he has the receipts to hold that position with the players. At the same time, the owners all want to be Mark Cuban because he's a rock star as an owner. They became NBA owners because they were rich as hell, but they didn't have a TV show. They weren't making appearances on Entourage. Now Mark Lazary is appearing on Billions. You think that's by accident? No. They all want to be Mark Cuban, and the players know that Mark Cuban has carried the flag for them on at least one issue that is very important to them. So I'm just looking at it and saying, yeah, Michael Jordan, there's a lot of reasons why he could do the job. But if you're asking me who the right man for the job is, Mark Cuban's credentials outweigh Michael's by just a little bit for me.
Yeah,
I'll give you that.
Yeah,
one,
you
Slick.
Caught me off guard with that. One, you got me, Slick. I apologize. Rewind the last 4 minutes. I take it off the record. Oh, man. Coming up, Adam Gase and Le'Veon Bell are playing a game of he said, he said. We'll tell you if Gase has already lost the Jets locker room next. I apologize to you, Slick Rick. I apologize.
Welcome back to Speak for Yourself. Let's return to the NFL. The Jets have had their fair share of drama this offseason. First, Jamal Adams got his wish and he was traded, but not before he publicly ripped head coach Adam Gase. Now, this week, Gase said star running back Le'Veon Bell was on the sidelines during practice because of hamstring tightness. But not according to Le'Veon. He took to Twitter to push back and said, ain't nothing wrong with my hamstrings. But he wasn't done, tweeting, quote, it's tough to stay loose when you do a bunch of standing around, and I'm used to going, emoji man. Dust emoji, dust emoji. I had to add my emoji.
Smoke.
LeVar is back with us. But Marcellus, I need to know, bro. Has Adam Gase lost control of this Jets locker room? Don't lie to me.
No.
Me lie? Boy, stop. I'm never going to lie. And he hasn't lost control of this locker room right now.
Look, look. I'm indifferent on Adam Gase. I don't know what to think, bad or good. That one press conference with the eyes, that was a little weird, but you know what? I can still play for you, coach. But I'm not going to blame this on Adam Gase because, let's be real, Jamal Adams, he had to go. Why did he have to go? Because somebody else wanted him, and they wanted to give him everything to go. So that's not on Adam Gase. That's the organization saying, almost they giving up? Two firsts? What? Okay. And they're going to have to pay him on top of that? So that's not on Adam Gase's record. Now let's get to Le'Veon Bell, who's just been the common denominator of miscommunication for so many years. It started in Pittsburgh, all the issues he had there, to the point where, you know what, y'all don't understand me. I'm going to have to leave and sit out a year. Okay. And then he gets to the Jets, and, you know, you're there. Oh, I was recruited by Jamal, who told me one thing, now he gone. I just, you know, everybody got the homie, the home girl, the homeboy that's always in the middle of something. And after a certain point, you got to be like, you need to get in the middle of that mirror and stare at yourself, because this one is on Le'Veon Bell. Stop trying to blame Adam Gase for everything happening wrong with the Jets. I think Le'Veon Bell doesn't have the greatest communication skills. Let's just go there.
No, Marcellus. Look, Adam Gase makes Joe Judge look like a competent head coach. Adam Gase, my dog had three star players. Had Jamal Adams, your first star safety early on, Pro Bowler. People are already acclaiming him as a potential future Hall of Famer so early in his career.
You're a beast.
Jamal Adams, ship him off to the Seattle. Okay, well, let's talk about your star quarterback, Sam Darnold. He's young, budding, got an SC, about to be a star. He was seeing ghosts last year, and Adam Gase, he was supposed to be the quarterback whisperer. So now let's move to your star running back, Le'Veon Bell. Oh, Le'Veon was a bad man. Best running back in the league just 2 years ago. And then Le'Veon Bell arguing with you on Twitter. The common denominator, Marcellus, if I am doing my math
right, don't do that.
Is Adam Gase, sir. Adam Gase, he shipped off Jamal Adams. Adam Gase can't get right with his quarterback. And Adam Gase can't get right with his running back. The problem,
what about
almost
Pittsburgh?
Said he said Adam Gase.
What about Pittsburgh? What about Pittsburgh? You didn't mention that.
LeVar.
Avocado Acho, I wanted to go with you.
What about Pittsburgh?
But I cannot
Come on, LeVar.
The common denominator in this particular conversation has to be Le'Veon Bell. I don't know if Adam Gase has lost control, ever had control, in control, control, Janet Jackson control. I don't know. But one thing I do know,
what you know,
is Le'Veon Bell be in his feelings, and he has no problem letting the public know that he's in his feelings. And I think sometimes these things come back to haunt him and can ultimately disrupt what his greatness on the field could possibly be. Every single time the coach makes a decision that isn't what you want it to be, Le'Veon, you can't take the social media and say, no, that ain't it. It's the head coach, Le'Veon.
Yeah.
It's the head coach. What are you doing? If you go to social media and say, my hamstrings are fine, he just had me on the sideline. You know what's going to happen, Le'Veon, and you know this happened in Pittsburgh.
What's going to happen?
You're going to be on the sideline, bro. You know why? Because you are not the ultimate decision maker
but here the thing,
LeVar, on these teams.
Here's the thing, bro. You're just going to let Le'Veon is a grown man. How you going to let another grown man sit here and lie on your name? If you not here one day, LeVar, and me and Marcellus like, man, I don't know, LeVar, he out, I was out at the club late last night, so he ain't show up for the show. You're going to tweet in and be like, no, that's not what happened. You're going to clarify, because you're not going to let us sit here and lie on your name.
Can I retort? Can
yes,
I retort?
Yes.
If y'all say that that's what it was, that's what it's going to be. Otherwise, I probably won't be on the show. And Le'Veon Bell needs to take note.
Look, he doesn't respect Adam Gase to be tweeting about his damn head coach. He didn't respect Mike Tomlin. He's the common denominator. He doesn't respect his homeboy, Jamal Adams, not knowing what he told him. Try to call him out and question his character instead of just calling it like it is. I'm just waiting for...
What you waiting for?
The walk to the line of scrimmage... Foot in the ground and take and off Le'Veon Bell to return to form. Because all the rest of this pig pen always got dust around him. That's getting a little old news for me.